I am Plata on the Line in Vancouver, British Columbia at thecommentary.ca. Dean Sarah Valley joins me now. He recently published a new novel, Where I Fall, Where She Rises. It follows two women who are at opposite sides of a kidnapping in Iraq. One woman is a Canadian journalist in the dangerous Red Zone in Baghdad. She's kidnapped along with Paul Schell, another journalist. The other woman that the book follows is his wife, Carol, at home in New York with child. She takes his kidnapping as a chance to assert her victimhood. I'll get Mr. Saravalli to tell us as much as he'd like about his book. Dean Saravalli is the author of the novels Reliving Charlie, Lock 7, and Chameleon Days. He is an award-winning teacher and the founder of Writers for Peace, a nonprofit organization that mentors students interested in writing and social justice issues. DeanSaravalliWriter.com is the website for more. This book is published by Inanna. He joined me from Niagara Falls, Ontario, in late October. Please welcome to the Plant Online program, Dean Saravalli. Mr. Saravalli, good morning.
Hello, thank you for having me.
Thanks for joining us. I don't read much poetry, and so William Blake's The Marriage of Heaven and Hell is something that I've never read. Is it something that I need to say as I start your book?
Not necessarily. It is like a poem that it's hard not to read over a few hundred times. It's just one of those poems that you can keep reading meaning into it.
Yeah.
So, you know, it is the thematic sort of or metaphorical thread line throughout the whole novel, but it is something that you can explore and discover in the novel itself.
Yeah, yeah. And it's something that as I'm reading your book, it makes me want to put it down and look at it, and I guess I should, shouldn't I? I mean, poetry in and of itself is edifying, to say the least. I mean, you can relate as a writer, right?
Yes, like, you know, I think as a writer you're always seeking out, like, contradictions and paradoxes and hypocrisies, and I don't think there's a poem out there that best sort of exemplifies contradictions and the truth within those contradictions more so than The Marriage of Heaven and Hell. So I thought it was an appropriate metaphor for a book about, you know, a war novel.
Uh-huh.
and all the hypocrisies and all the, you know, the deliberate contradictions and the paradoxes that usually emerge from a war period.
Yeah. The first person we meet as we begin the book is do we pronounce it Leah or Lee?
Yeah.
Leah. What circumstances does she find herself in as the book begins?
Well, she's a journalist. She's a freelance journalist in the Red Zone of
mm-hmm.
Iraq. And I'm not sure if you're familiar with the distinction between the Red Zone and the Green Zone, but the Green Zone protected journalists
right.
During the American invasion. So they were pretty well reporting on stories that were obviously secondhand, so
mm-hmm.
they weren't necessarily accurate. And then you had, like, a slew of others who were a little more dangerous or in more dangerous ground in the Red Zone, and they were freelancing and oftentimes relaying that information to more popular journalists in the Green Zone
yeah.
For a price, but also, you know, at the risk of their own lives. So Leah's that type of freelance journalist. She seems to live, like, a type of death wish because, you know, things haven't necessarily transpired in her life the way she wished them to transpire. So we find her at the very beginning of the novel, you know, in possession of a story that she's willing to give to another more popular journalist, but
uh-huh.
on her terms, and he needs to meet her in the Red Zone.
Yeah. And the interest in setting this book during that war, especially, was that something that you wanted to do as you were beginning the book? I mean, was that war, the Iraq War especially, was that something that you wanted to explore as a setting, say?
Yeah, I think in my own personal experience and you know, as someone who's educated and you know, academic, I was in an academic setting with a few fellow teachers, and one in particular was a very esteemed history teacher, and I remember gathering in the theater watching the invasion, the U.S. invasion, and he was so pro-attack, right,
mm-hmm.
pro-invade, and we were, I felt like we were all duped by the motivations for that war,
mm-hmm.
so I felt, okay, you know, here I am, well-read and very interested in politics and so forth, and I was fooled by so many things that transpired before, or the reasons for that war. So I figured it would be perfect to play with that medium, mm-hmm. and how important journalists were in kind of relaying information from overseas to, you know, to a market that was, you know, more commercial in nature. So I figured, okay, this gives me a nice contrast, and I have, you know, a character on either side. I have one in Iraq, you know, kidnapped and tortured, and then another one in New York that's exploiting it.
Yeah, and so that's Carol, and her husband Paul has been kidnapped. She's with child, and as we meet her in the book, she has a visitor, and is Timothy, is he the one who has the idea to exploit the situation, or is that something that Carol had in mind from the beginning?
Yeah, like I think it's like a, almost like a superb fantasy, mm-hmm. where, you know, here's this wife of a celebrity journalist who has always had to sort of find comfort in like his shade, so to speak, and then here comes the opportunity from, you know, his agent to achieve like a higher status or a celebrity status as a result of this, you know, again, circumstantial kidnapping, and she decides that yes, she's going to take advantage of it, and she's going to do so first and foremost with the, you know, I guess with the intention of taking care of her, providing for her unborn child. But then, you know, she immerses herself in it, she almost becomes, you know, obsessive compulsive about it,
mm-hmm.
and I just, you know, I just fell in love with that type of obsession with celebrity, and, you know, being in those 15 minutes and stretching those 15 minutes as long as she possibly could.
You know, you tell the story in alternating chapters. What drew you to that way of telling the story and using two different people to tell the story?
Well, I love always experimenting with, like, my novels are, I think, in with form, they're always somewhat experimental in terms of, like, point of view. So, to be honest with you, I started off with Paul, Carol's husband, as the main character, and then I found these two women far more interesting and far more complex,
uh-huh.
and it was kind of daunting for me, you know, as a male writer to sort of get into that sort of female voice, two of them, in fact, right? So I figured,
yeah.
you know, I let them share that protagonist role, and I kind of relegated my main character to a supporting character because, again, their wants and their needs were far more fascinating to me than his.
Yeah.
And I felt they were just much more dynamic and far more interesting and layered in motivation. So I decided, yeah, I'm just going to take this risk. And I think as a writer, I think you get adrenalized by taking such risks. I know I do, so.
Well, you are a male, and so these two characters are women. Did you feel that there were any restrictions as to how you could evoke these women as you do? Or it
yeah,
doesn't seem like it is as a reader, I must say.
Thank you. At the very beginning, you're always, you know, that thought creeps into your mind, you know, are you mansplaining something, or
mm-hmm.
Are you, you know, just using female characters to, you know, like, to sort of push your own agenda? But no, from the very beginning, I saw them as just, you know, real human beings who, like I said, had wants and needs that needed to be fulfilled and satisfied, and I wanted to see them in their own, like, specific context. I want to see them emerge as heroic and sometimes anti-heroic.
Mm-hmm.
But I was so fascinated by their characters, per se. I don't know if those characters really had anything to do with their gender. I think it had everything to do with what they wanted out of life and what they wanted to squeeze out of life for their own sort of, like I said, agendas. So,
yeah,
like, to me, it never became an issue of gender. It was always, you know, just fascination with their characters.
Yeah. Are Carol and Lee, are they the same at all? Do they share similarities, say?
Yeah, I think some degree they do. Like, all of them are very, like, strong, independent women from the inside out. Like, and even though at times Carol seems to be manipulated by Timothy, the agent, sometimes, you know, seems to be manipulated by Paul, who's apparently more successful than her. They have this kind of innate sort of drive to, and it's also an artistic one, I think, to really, really find the core of who they are. And I think that's what attracted me to them, the fact that they were seeking to understand who they were more than any other characters in the novel. So I felt like I had, like, incredible upside when you know, delving into their characters and finding their voices and understanding, you know, their emotional landscapes. To me, sky was the limit. And I think when you're an author, too, or a writer, you really want characters who provide you with no limit, you know, with so much potential to just explore every avenue of their characters. And yeah, to me, I felt that these two, I couldn't even decide on one. Like, if you're asking right now who the protagonist was, I thought it would be Leah after I relegated Paul, and then I decided, you know, they're going to share this role, because Carol, again, emerged as someone I didn't really like at the very beginning, but then fell in love with afterwards.
So you do like these characters, and I mean, I was telling you before we started that I am having trouble finding redeeming qualities in either of them. But I guess the relationship, I mean, otherwise you wouldn't write them if that was the case, right?
Yeah, like, you know, you always, like, I'm always interested in flawed characters. And to me, as a writer who is always excavating, like, regrets as inspiration and even, you know, past, like, I'm a nostalgia sort of sucker sometimes, and I love to sort of indulge in moments that I lost that I couldn't reform or redeem. So I felt these characters are kind of epitomized that type of regret, but the struggle, like the fact that they struggle against themselves, nonetheless, is to me like an heroic trait. Like my dad, actually my father was very much like that. He's always pushing forward. He recently passed, and I remember him that way, that he, no matter what obstacle in his character, he was always pushing through it, as opposed to avoiding it or hiding it or feeling insecure about it. So I felt these characters, at the very beginning, they are, in some ways, especially Carol, like, you know, even to the point of detestable, right, where she's like, oh my God, I can't believe you're actually taking advantage of this opportunity while your husband is being tortured across seas. But in any other circumstance, I think there's that little inkling where you're like, yeah, maybe I would do the same thing if presented with the opportunity, and I just work that right to the bone.
Yeah, see, that's what I why I find I don't like her, is that she's doing things that I wouldn't do, or that I wouldn't even think of doing, maybe.
Yeah.
Or maybe, like, I would. I don't know.
Well, we have a pretty persuasive, almost like borderline satanic agent. Yeah. Right, who is, you know, again, glamorizing the benefits of serving yourself above others.
Yeah.
I think that becomes appealing when you're getting a lot of attention for it. And in her at least makeup, her character makeup, she was never one to get, she always, you know, she wasn't even in the limelight. She was just, you know, the woman on the shoulder of someone who was. So yeah, like, you know, deep down, like I said, we have these sort of evil fantasies that are also self-serving, and I really, really want to just push those right to the limit and take risks with those attributes. And like I said, by the end, you know, I feel like she's sort of anti-heroic, but still heroic nonetheless.
Yeah.
Even though she's an anti-hero, she shows some qualities that are redeemable. Not as evident as I think with Leah.
I'll let you know when I finish the book.
Yeah,
if I think the same, you know. The other thing I was thinking about as I was starting the book is that when we talk about war, we obviously think of the troops that we're sending. We might think of, say, the politicians who send them to war, but we rarely think about the others that do go to war, and journalists especially, and the ones that get left behind. You know, family and the sort at home. And this book, I guess, made me realize, just what impact a war has on so many other people that are, you know, not necessarily front line, if you will.
Yes, yeah, like, you know, you said, yeah, like there's almost like mainstream and then like fringe characters,
yeah.
sort of, right, in any situation or any conflict, and obviously war is no different. You have characters that take enormous risks, you know, to secure something as transient as a story. And you kind of wonder sometimes, like, boy, what, you know, when I do the same, when I put myself in that sort of realm of danger to bear truth,
mm-hmm.
to maybe even a public, you know, like where it becomes sometimes, you know, distorted or even watered down, but it's just that inner drive, I think, that's within all of us for the truth, for meaning, for deeper meaning. And oftentimes we're at war, we're always questioning, why are we at war?
Yeah.
You know, sometimes deep into war, we're thinking, why did we start this war to begin with? Like,
yeah.
what pushed us into this? And I felt that war specifically was one of those wars. It was like, did you have to go in and invade? Like, is that, you know, even though, yeah, there were other economic and, you know, agendas at stake, was it necessary to start this type of war? Again, I don't think it ferreted out any terrorists. If anything, it might have created new groups of terrorists.
Right.
So it has all these, you know, sort of ramifications and these mutations. And then you have all these people who are literally in the line of fire or in no man's land trying to figure it all out. So to me, as a writer, I've done some journalism work myself, and you really have to be hungry for a story. I love that. I love that drive. That you need to have when you're a journalist, and you know. So I thought within a war, it would test it most.
For this book, Dean, did the story come first, or was it the characters?
I think one character, like Leah, came to me first,
mm-hmm.
because I just imagined like a journalist sort of isolated, alone, in the red zone. Because I did some research and I was reading all of these fascinating stories in the red zone, and then I came across this journal. It was a visual journal from Al-Qaeda, and it depicted tortures that were specific to journalists that were kidnapped.
Mm-hmm.
And luckily I printed it off, because then it disappeared from the internet site where I found it, and I figured, oh my God, this is the stuff that you're not hearing on CNN or anywhere else.
Yeah, yeah.
And if we did, I think it would cause an uproar. And there were numerous ones. So I figured, okay, now that there's a reason why I found this in my research. And then the story seemed to emerge from her kind of suffering, mm-hmm. right? Like her torture. And I figured, okay, it's going to be gruesome, and I'm going to have to go into some dark quarters here that might, you know, end up being disturbing to some readers. But I had to be true to the story and true to their experiences. And I figured that she would lead that surge in the novel. And then after that, like I said, I came up with Paul, and I figured, okay, maybe he's really the main character, but then he wasn't. And I said, actually, his wife is far more interesting than he is.
Mm-hmm.
In New York. So I figured, okay, you know, where one falls, the other one rises. And that's where I came up with the title, the premise for the novel, and it went from there.
Yeah. Now, you mentioned being a teacher. What ages do you teach?
I teach grade 11, 12. Well, actually, I teach all grades, secondary school, and then I teach college as well.
Uh-huh. And that must be fascinating, because you have people that are sort of forced, I guess, to take certain courses, and then you have ones that sign up because they, you know, they need to, or because they want to. I find it curious when I talk to academics who are also writers, because I growing up did not have an eye for fiction, and certainly not poetry. But as I get older, I realize just how important they are. Can an appreciation for writing, for fiction, for poetry, can that be taught, do you think?
In your case, you're getting wiser, so.
I don't know about that.
I don't know. It's that whole, you know, that old adage where, you know, you make up fiction in order to find greater truth, you know?
Mm.
And I think sometimes now, especially in this day and age, so much of what we presumed was factual at one point, and the trust that we sort of afforded those facts, whether it came from like a media platform, like a news channel, or or even from our history books, has been discredited so much, right? Like, and then I think now there's a deeper appreciation for, you know, not only the content that's being delivered, but how it's being delivered. So I think as you grow older, you start to sort of read between the lines, and you start to see that, yes, this is exaggerated a little bit more than that, and this is fictionalized more than factual, and then you start to see the discrepancies, but you also start to see how one is dependent on the other, and it's the combination, and that's where I came up, like, that's where I used the marriage of heaven and hell. It came to me right away, because that's exactly what it is. You have, you know, heaven and hell, and you have these two opposing forces that sort of come together to try to demonstrate a truth or try to sort of reveal a truth, and I think as we get older too, we're always seeking higher meaning as we've experienced more and more life, and I think that's where it comes in, and I think kids are, like, at least ones that they're innocent in their approach to literature, like they really, really throw themselves into it, and I think adults are a little more cynical when they're looking at fiction, because they figure, you know, am I really gaining something from this? Like, am I being educated by this fiction?
Yeah.
When in actuality, you are emotionally. I think it's more of, fiction is more for emotional intelligence than it is for sort of academic intelligence. It's one of the reasons why I like doing it. Like, I like reading fiction for that reason, to make that type of impact.
And I'm also wondering how you find the time to write, because you're obviously very busy, right?
Yeah. Actually, I have like 4 jobs. I have 4 kids, and now it's a dog. And so yeah, it gets busy, but it makes you appreciate the time that you have to carve out and make for something that you're passionate about. And I am passionate about it. Like you know, like the actual writing process itself, it really truly adrenalizes me, and I love coming up with ideas and exploring them and kind of working them out and developing them and fleshing them out with character. But there are some days where it is frustrating because, you know, you're trying to create, and then, you know, the sort of duties or the obligations of a day kind of interfere. And they just keep presenting obstacle after obstacle, and you're like, oh, my God, am I going to have energy to get to the writing?
Yeah. But you not only have to carve the time to write, I'm sure you have to make the time to read as well, and I think that's something that we all have to do.
Yes, definitely. Yeah, definitely. You know, like, that's, you know, it's one of the reasons why you want to write. Like, I like what Toni Morrison said. She, you know, if there's a book that you haven't read yet or you want to read, you should write it. So I think sometimes for me, I'll go to a bookstore and there are books that don't necessarily draw me in, and I figure to myself, yeah, I want to write the book that I like to read.
Yeah.
And you hope that other people will sort of find the same type of connection to it, and that's sometimes the frustrating part too, right? Because oftentimes it doesn't happen as quickly as you hope it does, but in the end, it's the connection you want to make, I think, more than anything else that keeps driving you to keep writing.
Yeah. Well, long may it continue. I'm enjoying this book a great deal, as I said, and I've enjoyed this time that you've taken out of your busy schedule to talk with me. I appreciate it. Congratulations on the book, and continued good luck with it, Dean.
Thank you, Joseph, and thank you once again for having me again.
The book is called Where I Fall, Where She Rises. It's published by Inanna. The website for more is at deansaravallywriter.com. Dean Saravalli joined me on the line from Niagara Falls in Vancouver. I'm Joseph Planta.